You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. Thank you for your constant support. You help keep independent community radio alive.
Corcoran will be telling us a little bit about her disability work. So, can you tell me a little bit about your connection to the disabilities world?
Okay, well, about 6 years ago, our very first granddaughter was born, and she suffered a preventable, catastrophic brain injury during her birth, and that day changed our lives forever. We've been on a mission since the day she was born to, one thing, try to make change in the system because, you know, being in it firsthand, there's so many broken parts. And the second thing was, right at the very beginning, there was no roadmap. You know, you're kind of sent home from the NICU, not knowing if our grandchild was going to live or die, and there was no support at all. And so for the last 4 years, I've been on a mission to try to change the system, which is almost impossible. But last fall, I met this wonderful lady at our park at Whispering Springs. Her name was Ellen. She was at a retreat, and the organizers of the retreat asked me to share our granddaughter Ayla's story. So I spent about half an hour sharing our journey with what we've been trying to do to make a difference. And this woman, Ellen, came up to me afterwards, and she said she had breast cancer. She found a very similar situation where, you know, after all that she went through, there was really nowhere to turn for support, or, you know, she just said it was very difficult. So she wrote a book about it. And a couple of guys from London, Ontario, they read her book and they said, we are going to build the very first AI companion using lived experience for people going through breast cancer. So Ellen came up to me and she said, we are going to build Ask Ayla. And so we met the wonderful people from Gambit who built the platform. And we just launched probably 2 months ago, Ask Ayla. And it's in 100 countries and 65 different languages. And it's based on our lived experience of what we went through during such a difficult time and nowhere to turn. And so it's AI with a heart, I think. And my daughter and her husband, Dave, they were interviewed for a week, asked hundreds of questions. And so that was how the platform was built. And it is incredible. We're so thrilled and honored that this company, Gambit, chooses one person or one family a year to build this for free. And without a blink, they chose Ask Ayla. And it really is going to change the world on how we look at support for families when they get this catastrophic diagnosis. And Ayla has stage 5 quadriplegic cerebral palsy. She can't talk, she can't walk, she can't crawl. She has no use of her arms. We have traveled around the world for therapy. My daughter and her husband just spent 3 30-day treatments in Bangalore, India, with cutting-edge technology where they use frequency, to activate neurons in the brain, and for the very first time after her second 30-day treatment, she laughed, and it was a purposeful laugh because my daughter was doing something funny, and she just broke out in laughter. So we feel there is hope that, you know, even if we can, you know, get her to communicate with us, it will be huge. And, you know, our goal right now is to give her the best life possible.
So,
you know, that's where kind of we started. They had another baby right away to get stem cell, which her little sister Emma was a perfect match, and they went to Duke University and had a stem cell transplant. We've been all over just trying to find anything that could help her and, you know, if there's any hope of recovery. To be honest with you, we did not even know what cerebral palsy was, and I hate to say that because it is such a tough, tough journey, and it literally has changed us forever.
So I'm wondering, those dark days when doubt and the hardness of the situation creeps in, how do you keep yourself strong and centered on the idea that progress can be made, that there can be steps forward?
Well, my daughter, she is a fabulous researcher. So right from day one, she every night was spent researching anything and everything. And she said her biggest support that she found was going to, you know, we'd drive into Toronto 2 or 3 days a week for therapy, and it was meeting mothers in the waiting room or with their children who were sharing what's worked for them and what, you know, what didn't. So we literally probably have tried over, I'd say, 25 different types of therapy. We bought a hyperbaric chamber when she was 6 months old, and we'd all take turns every day. Thousands of hours were spent in that chamber. You know, so anything and everything we've tried, because you never know when you might hit something that is going to work, like the cytotron that we did in India. We know that her brain scans show new pathways being made, and so we're really trying to focus on that and not, you know, what she can't do, but what she can do. And she's a remarkable little girl.
So do you have any advice for folks out there who might just be starting this journey and asking some of the same questions you did? What's the next step, and how do I come together with those who can be that community around me, help me reach the best possible potential?
That's exactly why we built Ask Ayla, was for that reason. And we share a lot of the therapies in that platform. But, you know, it's such an, you know, every child is so different. So one thing that could work for one may not work for another. But it's just honestly just, you know, if you hear of something that was successful for another family, you know, you have nothing to lose by trying. One therapy we have found to be incredible, and I tell people all over about this, is this wonderful woman from Brazil, Mariana. She started a company, and she's in Mississauga, called WeFlow. And WeFlow focuses on the fascia work. Now, very few people ever mentioned fascia to us. You know, I don't even really, you know, fascia is the connective tissue under your skin. And so Mariana, what she does, which is a lot different than a lot of different therapies out there, is she teaches the family what to do. So we go every 6 months. We spend 2 or 3 days there. And Mariana teaches Jenna, my daughter, rolling a gel ball over every part of Ayla's body. And it literally has reshaped her body. She has a strong core. She can hold her head up. Everything's working properly in her digestive system. Like for a year, her first year of life, she screamed for all day, every day. She couldn't eat. We were bouncing on a ball 12 hours a day. And this has changed all of that. So if there's one therapy I would look into, it is that, because it puts the power in the parents' hands. You know, you can do it when you're watching TV. It's not We know a lot of the therapies we've been to, that the OT and PTs are trying to force these kids to walk before they're ready. And that's why a lot of these kids will, their gait will be off, because their brain and their body hadn't really connected yet. So the whole goal behind fascia therapy is to build a strong body. So when the brain hopefully makes that connection, they'll be able to, you know, they'll be at the best possible stage to have that work for them.
Right, thank you.
The other thing I found very, very helpful, and I started doing this about 6 months ago, I've joined every cerebral palsy Facebook group I can find, and there is so many mothers out there searching for answers, but there's a lot of people out there who have cerebral palsy and are sharing their insight of what has helped them and where are they further on in their life, where, you know, we're starting out with a brand new baby and toddler, but they've lived the life, so they have wonderful information that can really give, you know, parents hope. And you know, we just have to hang on for that hope, because, you know, that first laugh we ever heard out of Ayla's mouth was like, we never expected we'd ever hear that. So we're celebrating every little milestone that we can get from her. So, but that has been a great resource, and I dedicated myself. I said every single night, I'm going to go on these Facebook groups, and I'm going to share my information to three different families. And I can tell you, I'm getting letters back from families now saying that WeFlow has changed our child's body. Like, we're just so grateful, because no one's talking about this. It's out there, and it truly, truly works. And I have nothing to gain from saying that, except I saw firsthand what a difference it's made for Ayla.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Thanks. This next segment of our show is a post-dated one, so some of the events referred to may already have happened. In this segment of our show, Megan Hines will be giving us an update on her power hockey work. So what's the latest with power hockey?
Yeah, it's been a busy spring. We just got back from Finland, where Team Canada competed in the World Championships. It was a super great experience. You know, we're still learning as a team. We had some challenges to overcome with one of our players not being eligible to participate, as he didn't meet classification criteria on a disability. But, you know, the team really came together, rallied behind each other, and while the score didn't reflect kind of what we put into the tournament, again, it was a great experience. So excited to continue to grow and kind of for the next few years leading up to the next World Championship.
So for those who might not be as familiar with the sport, since it's been a little while since it's been on, can you tell me a little bit about power hockey as a sport?
Yeah, absolutely. So power hockey is one of the few sports that is accessible to power chair users. So it's basically played on a gym floor, played in kind of everyday power wheelchairs. When we compete internationally, it's played in sport chairs. And yeah, the rules are based off a combination of ice hockey and kind of floorball type rules. And again, it's a really inclusive sport. You have individuals who have, you know, full upper body strength and are able to do more of the stick handling, what we call our hand stick players. They're able to hold their stick. And then you have individuals, you know, like myself, who have more limited upper body strength, maybe disabilities like muscular dystrophy or spinal cord injuries. And we attach our stick to our chairs and are called T-stick players. And kind of maybe do more of the blocking and kind of providing spacing for players. And so, yeah, like I said, it's been one that I've really benefited from in terms of my 25 plus years experience playing, and a lot of opportunities to compete on the floor, kind of develop as a team, develop as a player, but so many benefits off the floor as well, in terms of, you know, that sense of community that you build, you know, peer mentoring from other players, in terms of navigating life with a disability and stuff. So yeah, it's one, a sport that's really changed my life personally, and everyone else I've spoken with as well has had the opportunity to participate.
So when you mentioned the benefits, could you elaborate a little bit on some of the health and possibly muscular development benefits
Yeah, absolutely. So it's given it is kind of a sport where a broad range of individuals can play, obviously there's kind of the physical active lifestyle benefits in terms of, you know, competing in a sport and kind of that endurance and physical aspect, but also, again, the benefits outside of that in terms of, you know, developing skills that you can use off the floor. So things like teamwork, strategic thinking, problem solving, those are all kind of skills that I've learned through sport that I've kind of taken with me in my career and former education and whatnot. And really as well, you know, given there's a broad age range of people with disabilities that are able to play, you know, you have younger individuals or maybe individuals who are newly, you know, disabled, learning from individuals who may be older, kind of have a long-term disability, and things like navigating life with a disability, how to, you know, obtain attendant care funding, or how to, you know, have attendants help you, or, you know, going to school or going through like employment and navigating all that kind of life with a disability. So, yeah, there's a whole host of benefits that I could definitely go on and on about, but definitely really helps create well-rounded individuals at the end of the day.
So I'm guessing the community aspect has a side effect of being good for mental health.
Absolutely. No, 100%. Even like going to the recent world championships and competing internationally, you know, we develop sense of community of players, you know, with from other countries and as well, which is really cool to be able to develop that kind of network. You know, you may only see them once a year or so, but you stay connected, you know, through social media and other aspects. And, you know, I've been fortunate to compete internationally, and sometimes I stay, you know, a couple of days after in whatever country you're visiting, and, you know, tapping into those individuals and saying, hey, you know, what's an accessible way to get around XYZ country, or any tips on accessible places, things like that. So definitely it's, you know, has a huge impact on mental health for sure, in terms of having, you know, that network to draw on, that community to draw on, because, you know, there are aspects of having a disability that can be challenging, and but again, having people to lean on and kind of maybe vent to, or kind of, you know, share in experiences, but then work together and understand what others have done to problem solve and kind of navigate, again, the challenges that may come with disability is super, super beneficial for sure.
So when you do compete internationally, do you find that other countries take it into consideration, the accessibility needs that travelers such as yourself may have?
Absolutely. So, you know, I wear a couple hats in power hockey. One is a player, one is I lead Power Hockey Canada, and the other, they sit on our the International Power to Hockey Sport Executive Committee to kind of support the growth of the sport internationally. But any tournament that, you know, is put on for anyone, there's a lot of rigor that goes into place, especially for, like, a world championships in terms of, you know, accessibility needs, ensuring that, you know, the accommodation can support, you know, a diverse range of needs, transportation, ensuring that, you know, people are able to get from the airport to the venue and vice versa, and all the different aspects. So yeah, it's a huge, huge part about ensuring that, you know, people are able to compete to their fullest and not have to think about, you know, ooh, can I go to the washroom, can I go to bed kind of thing, but making sure that they're in, like, the best shape to be able to compete and put on their best performance.
Right, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
For sure.
Andy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
The Canadian Human Trafficking Hotline is now live to help victims and survivors get vital social and emergency services. If you need help or want to help stop human trafficking, call 1-833-900-1010.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wiles. Earlier in our show, we heard a little bit about Ask Ayla from Nancy Corcoran, and Megan Hines gave us an update on her power hockey work. In this segment of our show, Tiffany Houston will be telling us a little bit about the Shine Foundation.
So, what can you tell me about the foundation?
Shine Foundation has been around. Next year is actually our 40th anniversary. It started back in 1987. It was a gentleman from London, Ontario. He lost his son to muscular dystrophy and decided to start Shine Foundation, which was formerly the Sunshine Foundation, so that dreams could come true for other kids like his son. What we do is individualize dreams for our participants, and they are aged 11 to 21 across the country. Dream is all about impact. It is
something they're it could be something for their career. It could be accessible sporting equipment. It could be an accessible room. It's really, if they can dream it and we can do it, a dream will be delivered.
So how does the foundation reach out to those who might benefit from having their dream get a little boost?
Okay, we work with referral sources across the country. So we work with, in every province, we work with occupational therapists, physiotherapists, doctor's offices, hospitals. It really depends on the province that we're working with. But they're the ones, we go to them and say, this is how many dreams we can deliver in your province this year, and then they bring the dreamers to us because they know what our qualifying criteria is.
So are there any common trends in the types of things people hope for in terms of the dreams fulfilled?
It's funny you ask that, Cam, because we were looking at that the other day because our 40th anniversary is coming up. And we were looking at, have the dreams changed over the years? And they haven't. Like, they're still asking for technology, but technology has changed over 40 years. They're still looking for accessibility, but the ability to have an accessible sporting equipment or a chair or something, that has changed over the years. So what they dream of has not changed necessarily, but technology has changed over the years.
So in your work, do you ever encounter any myths or stereotypes concerning muscular dystrophy?
Not necessarily muscular dystrophy alone, but disability in general, yes. I'll give you an example. We were doing our 9,000th dream last year, and that was for a young girl named Scarlett who was born blind, and all she wanted was a makeover. So when I would tell people about it, donors or prospective participants, whatever, they'd say, but why? She's blind. Why would she want a makeover? And I was like, oh my goodness, close your eyes. And they'd look at me and I'd say, seriously, close your eyes. You know how you feel. You know how your clothes feels on you. You know how you feel because it's your best day and your hair looks great and your makeup's great or your outfit perfect. You know what that feels like. Why do you think Scarlett doesn't feel that? Just because Scarlett is blind does not mean she doesn't know what she wants to project to the outside. So it's more so those. It's the people saying, well, why would they want that? It's questioning the dream itself. And our kids, we are doing this coming year. We're having a summit, a Dreamer Summit, and we're bringing dreamers from across the country in, and we're really giving them an opportunity to build out their toolkits. And it's really what we're calling it is more than you see. So we really need our dreamers to believe in themselves first and know that they're more than people see before they can project that outwards. So that's really our biggest mission for 2027 is having our dreamers know that they're more than people see.
So in your time with the foundation, is there any success moment or story that stands out for you you'd like to share?
Well, actually, yeah. I worked on my very first dream. I did just over 3 years ago now, and I met a young man named Avon from British Columbia. And Avon had fallen off Whistler. He was a downhill mountain bike competitor and was quadriplegic on impact pretty much from the accident. And having spent some time with him a year post having the accident, we got him what's called a Bowhead cycle, which is a very customized bike. And after spending 2 days with him getting back riding again as a quadriplegic, I had asked David, like, what's next? And he was like, well, look at me. I don't know. I can't go to university. I'm like, but why? Well, look at me. And I'm like, I am looking at you. I see you. And that's kind of where what I was just saying, the more than you see comes from, is I see you. You need to see you. He is now, after connecting him with some mentors who are also quadriplegics in our circle, he is now going to school, going to university, living on his own, has a part-time job. So every single one of them, Cam, is a success. And when you get to see, when they change from that mindset of I can't to I can, and you can see it when that kind of shift happens, it is powerful. So every single one of the dreamers that we work with is a success story, because they have that ability to make a change. A dream is life-changing. So it doesn't matter what that dream is, it is life-changing for them. And every single one of them is successful for me.
So it's interesting you bring that up. Do you have any advice for those out there who might be looking with doubt as to whether something's possible? How to get from that mindset of a person could never do this to Let's see how they make it happen.
I really think they need to find that mentor, which is what we're doing with, so I'm talking to you, and you're from the Windsor area, correct?
Correct.
So we have a gentleman who was a big supporter of ours and sadly passed away last year, and he was a very big businessman in the Windsor Essex area, and that is Mr. Dave Batten. So we're doing a program called the Dave Batten Alumni Program that we're launching this year, and that is all about having them connect with other people. They need to be able to see in themselves, in their mentor, they need to be able to see them that they can achieve anything. And that's what we keep telling our guys. Even if they're nonverbal, you can still achieve your goals. You just need to find that mentor to help you get through it. And that's what we're doing, is we're have a mentorship program, an ambassador program, and we're launching that this year. So I really think if you don't believe in yourself, you need to find that person that you can see yourself in. And they are out there. You just have to find them.
So we're saying that for Scarlett's makeover, you invented something rather creative to allow her to fully experience it.
Yeah, we realized during Scarlett's makeover that the beauty industry, there is nothing out there there is an accessible palette for her. She would tell us, I'm trying to do makeup, but then I run my finger through all of them, and my eyes end up really colorful, and people say it looks great, but I have no idea. So we created a one-of-a-kind palette. We call it Scarlett's Palette for her. And we worked with a bunch of different blind advocates, CNIB and other influencers. And we created an actual one-of-a-kind, like I said, 3D-printed palette for her. And it has raised shapes, and it has a QR code. And when you scan the QR code, it talks her through the palette and the colors and what to do with each, and gives her a little makeup tutorial. And she loved it, and it really gave her confidence. And when I met Scar at the beginning, she was just this feisty 13-year-old, and she has become so confident and so poised over the past year of becoming an ambassador for us. We did a lot of work with that one with her, and it's just been so beautiful. You asked earlier about seeing them, what was the success story? Seeing Scarlett shine and her independence and her confidence since getting her dream and getting this palette that is meant for her has been such a beautiful thing to watch.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
I always find it fascinating, my friends, the innovations people can come up with. Listening to Tiffany's interview about coming up with a makeup palette for someone with a vision impairment struck me as utterly remarkable. But then again, why shouldn't someone in that situation be allowed to find that independence, to fulfill their dream? I've always maintained that a person with a disability will tend to look at the world in a practical sense. What will work? What will not work? How will this apply to me? And learning from others' lived experience can be a valuable asset. But once you've learned what methods do and do not work for that individual, you have to ask the question, what do I want out of life? And how can I start to make that happen? For I maintain there is always a way. A person with a disability is no less entitled to explore their own potentials and also their own creativity as anyone else. And if you start with the notion of, I can succeed, this can be adapted, chances are that'll keep your motivation up. Motivation is key. If you go in with a defeatist attitude and say, this can't be done, yeah, you're going to look at it from that standpoint. But if someone's opened the door, if someone has said, I have broken down this barrier, why can't you break down the next one? Why can't you find a way to live the things you want to live in this world? It's a lot harder to say it's impossible. Someone's proven otherwise. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.
Everybody has a stomach ache from time to time, but when you regularly experience abdominal pain, bloating, constipation, and/or diarrhea, you might have IBS. Go to badgut.org and take the 30-second IBS test to find out. As many as 20% of British Columbians have irritable bowel syndrome. Got a bad gut? Go to badgut.org for good advice.